you. Thank you. My name is Anita, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Anita.
And my anniversary was August 31st, and I celebrated 35 years.
Wow.
And I forgot to mention it, like, whenever that was, but anyway. But I told my sponsor, you know, I just try to think of it as a day at a time. I really do. I think a day at a time. I have not had the urge to drink or do drugs, but I have had to do battle with many other character defects over the years. And, you know, so I still try to work this program. I still, I went to meetings, fortunately, on Zoom through the pandemic. And when this group started up, I did come back. This group persevered through much of the pandemic, meeting outside and everything. So it's really a tribute to this format. For the benefit of the people who are new, I should also say I'm just a fill-in. You know, the format for this group is usually to have a speaker come in several weeks, at least 3 weeks, maybe four, five, six, and go through the first 164 pages of the book. I'm filling a one-week gap before we start with the next person. Usually that person will start kind of with step one and kind of go through it. I don't know. Sometimes they pick a theme. But I was going to speak about the chapter We Agnostics, which kind of deals with step two and step three. But just for a second, we'll talk just for a little bit about step one for the benefit of the new people. And step one, of course, is realized we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. And everyone thinks, oh, that's easy, you know I have problems. But, you know, it was still hard to make that admission. I remember very clearly when I first came into AA, I was in my 20s working, and I worked at a job where Thursday night was we worked Sunday through Thursday. So Thursday night was kind of our Friday night, and we all went out drinking. And most of the people who worked there were much older than me. I really wanted to hang with them. And I had started drinking in college, but I hadn't been that bad. And then when I went out with these people and they were buying, you know, then it got really bad. And, you know, there was a little bit of drugs mixed in. And it was you know, it was so much fun at first, and then there was just so much trouble afterward. And I was living in New York alone, you know, or with a roommate, you know, here and there. But, you know, I would often find myself trying to get home from a bar at 2 a.m. on the streets of New York by myself. And I would say, you know, what are you doing? You know, I grew up in a relatively small city in Pennsylvania. My parents were not alcoholics. I knew I was in trouble. I knew I was in trouble and that my life was unmanageable. I had no real knowledge of AA except from, like, the movies. I thought it was kind of, I don't know what I thought, but I was in therapy, which I could hardly afford. And hi. And I was in therapy, and one day I confessed to my therapist, you know, I was drunk, I got home, I almost got mugged on the subway, I was scared to death, I don't know what, you know, I was just kind of going on. And she said, well, how often do you drink? And she began to make some inquiries, and she said, well, you know, I really can't treat you. She said, I cannot treat you if you're actively drinking, if you're really such a mess. You know, I think you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just said, what? You know, like, what? And I don't know what, I'm trying to think. I used to watch a lot of old movies. I guess I saw, what's that movie with, what's, you know, whatever, the Lost Weekend? And, you know, or what? I don't know. And so, you know, I was in Manhattan. I lived in Brooklyn, and there were a lot of meetings, you know, and I looked into it. And I think right before I went, I thought it was, the only thing I thought was similar, like I read up on it, this was even before the internet, I don't know where I read up on it, but I read something, and I thought it was going to be kind of like Weight Watchers, like a support group, like you go, and they teach you how to drink, and they give you like booklets or something.
Yeah.
I was a complete idiot, and I was like, all right, so I'm going to go here, it's going to be like Weight Watchers. My mom had gone to Weight Watchers, she'd gotten all these pamphlets, she had lost weight, it was like a support group, and I thought, all right, I can do this. And of course, you know, it's nothing like that. I went into a huge group in a room like with that partition open, like down by Wall Street where I worked. The first person I saw was someone from my office, you know, and I knew, and I was just like, oh my God. And I was what they used to call then really mocus, just confused and in a fog. I saw the steps on the wall, and but it didn't make any sense, you know. And I kept thinking, I thought of two things. It was either going to be like Weight Watchers, or it was going to be like a pyramid scheme, like Tony Roberts, you know, Robbins or whatever, where you take the weekend, the two-day class, then you take the four-day class, then you take the week-long class, then you go away for 2 weeks, then you go in there, you know, and you're paying more and more and more and more, and one day they're going to tell you what the big secret is, you know, what's the big secret, what's the secret. And so I thought, it's either like that or it's like Weight Watchers. And one reason I was going to talk about We Agnostics is because it talks a lot about how we come into the program and we really don't, not we, but a lot of people come into the program and they don't realize it's a spiritual program or that there's a spiritual component. And I was truly one of those people because I thought it was either, you know, more of a how to self-help or a, you know, I don't know, you know, and or a day by, you know, a weighing, a measuring, a calculating type of thing. So, you know, step one, you know, I was powerless over alcohol. I'd lost the power of choice and control. When I took one drink, I always said, especially because I had very little money, I was the lowest paid, I was the youngest in the office, I said, I have $20. When this is gone, I'm out of here. You know, and I had a free cab ride. We had these vouchers because we work late. I said, once $20 is gone, I have to leave because I have no money. And somebody else always bought, you know, at that point. I was like, well, then I'll get the next round. And there I was at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know. And I had no power or control over my drinking. I had a lot of things that I never did, but that's because I had the structure of work. I had this job. I always put my job first. When I cashed my paycheck, the first thing I always bought was tokens for the subway. Remember that? That shows how old I am. Because I figured I had to get to work. I bought tokens before I bought food. And I bought food before I bought liquor, because I like to eat. And I bought, you know, toilet paper. And then I bought beer. And so that's the only reason that a lot of things that you hear in stories I never did was because I had to get to work. My parents had told me when I went to college, which was when I started drinking, they said, we didn't send you here to fail. We can't afford it. You know, you're on a scholarship. We're putting our life savings into educating you. Do not mess up, you know. And so that's kind of the way I drank. I drank, but I did not want to get messed up. I didn't want to lose my job, get fired, anything. That just, like, could not happen. And so I ended up in AA as a result of this therapist, and I thought, well, I got the first step, you know. My life, I had no power over alcohol. My life was unmanageable. And then the second step came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know, all right. You know, I didn't have I just went down the steps. I kind of didn't have a problem with it. I didn't realize you were supposed to, like, do anything. I thought that was just, like, an advisory, you know. Like, that was, like, their policy, you know. Like, you read, I worked in a corporation, and they had, like, a vision statement. You know, well, we were there to work. We don't know what the vision is, you know. Right. And so I kind of thought that was, like, their vision statement, the steps. So I hung around, and I liked it. I liked the people. It was funny. I loved the stories. Back then, it was really compelling stories. So I ended up staying, and you know, and I got a sponsor, and I got sober. And I don't attribute it to me. I really believe it was a higher power. You know, another reason why I'm going to start reading this chapter and talk about it is because I've been sort of taken a winding path in terms of faith, you know. When we came, so, you know, I had the first step down. I started working with a sponsor, a woman a little older than I was, who was an artist, and she had me reading the book. And I went to a group that was mixed. It was there were a lot of people who were sober through the book, and there were a lot of people who had more of a fellowship sobriety, at least temporarily. and who told incredibly compelling stories. The group, my home group, was called Completely Sober, and there were people there with drug stories as well as alcohol. But my sponsor was a book person. She had me reading the book. We talked about each chapter. We didn't read it out loud together, but I read and I talked to her. And when it came time to write, I wrote. When it came time to make amends, I made amends. And, you know, through the book, through God, and through her, I got sober and I was able to stay. And but We Agnostics was a chapter initially I had some problems with. And, you know, I've had my ups and downs with faith and with God. I grew up in, you know, a black Protestant church. I went very often and I believed. But once I got to college, my faith just faded away, like it does for so many people. I wanted to get in with men. I wanted to party. Like a lot of teenagers, I suddenly saw my parents as hypocrites, you know, and ridiculous. And our church had, like all churches do, a number of scandals with money. And I just thought, these people don't know anything. You know, I am not believing a word they say. One of the pastors had an affair, and I just thought, you know, you can't preach to me. You know, I was 16, 17, 18, so judgmental. And like when I was 12 or 13, I was so religious. You know, I was really, I had my Bible, I was in a youth group, and, you know, I just went back and forth. You know, so I was religious, not spiritual, but, you know, and then I lost it. Then I went to college and I got in with some spiritual groups there, but then I lost that. I had looked into Buddhism and I became a Buddhist at one point, and I was that for a long time. And I found that didn't work as well for me with AA, and I came back to, you know, a more mainstream belief. I've met people in AA who are just amazingly, wonderfully spiritual with no real religious background at all. And, you know, I guess the thing I want to say overall before I read this is it's a big tent. Don't be intimidated by the word God, you know, and just, you know, jump in and find your way. And this chapter, in some ways, I think it's good. It sets forth some very open doors. But in, you know, if you find something that doesn't sit well with you, you know, keep coming back. That's kind of a dry saying. But and don't be afraid to talk about faith, spirituality, and even religion with other people in the group, because you'll find many people have taken varied and winding paths to faith in a higher power. And you'll find all kinds of higher powers here. And, you know, your mind can really be expanded. We had a guy, you can go on the group's website, we had a guy a while ago, Barefoot Bill, who I thought was really wonderful, talking about faith and spirituality in a very open and expansive way. And, you know, I just think there's a lot here. To me, the faith path was the slowest to develop. I kind of said, yeah, I'm powerless. Yep, I believe a higher power can restore me to sanity. Yep, let's do the fourth step. I had no hesitation. Let's do the fifth step. Let's move. You know, I was kind of like ready to do it, you know. And the true feeling of the spiritual nature of this program has come to me much later. And that's okay. You know, you can work the steps, do your fourth step, fifth step, make your amends while you are still gaining faith and while you're still working that end of the program. So don't be intimidated. But why don't I read? Okay. All right. So I'm on page 44 in this book with the huge print because I am old. So I'm just going to read a little bit. Chapter 4, We Agnostics. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or even a little bit, or if, when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Now, I once heard a recording of Sandy B., one of my favorite speakers who's passed away. If you get on a website or you can get a recording of Sandy B., I really recommend it. He talks about this where he says, it's like a game show, you know, to be doomed to an, what do you want? You know, a guy holds a microphone, what do you want? Do you want to be doomed to an alcoholic death or do you want to live on a spiritual basis? And the guy stands there, you know, while the clock is ticking, trying to decide. He told it much more funny than I did. But the point is, you know, when I first read this, to live on a spiritual basis, you know, no one wants to be like a holy Joe, you know. Nobody wants to be a boring, pious person, you know, who everyone, you know, dislikes. Or, you know, what does it mean? He doesn't define it here. What does it mean to live on a spiritual basis? You know, does it mean I have to pray all the time? Do I have to wear a rosary? What do I have to, you know, and we all have some picture in our mind, and often it's a negative one. And that's why, you know, as Sandy B. said, you know, it seems like these two alternatives are both terrible. You know, an alcoholic death. Well, what does that involve? You know, is it quick? Is it painless? No. And to live on a spiritual basis, you know, we just don't know. And at times, like, it's once you have some sobriety, you think, how could I ever have thought that, you know, dying an alcoholic death was the better choice, you know? But, you know, at some point, it seems like it's up in the air. But it isn't so difficult. About half of our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago, but we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. And this, I think, is where I began to realize that this was not simply a program of tips and tricks or philosophy. You know, you hear that a lot in dieting is, you know, you have to have a different attitude toward food. My attitude is, if it's there, I'm going to eat it. So, you know, it's not enough to be philosophically, you know, to change my philosophy. You know, you can have these attitudes, you can have these thoughts, you can have only $20 in your pocket, and you can still find yourself really drunk at 3 a.m., you know. And it's not enough to have these sort of external things. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. Now, this is a very interesting point. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. We are not saying to people who come into AA, just believe in God, just believe, just trust us. I mean, in one sense we're saying that, but what we really are saying is if you follow all of the steps in the first 164 pages in this book, it will enable you to find a power greater than yourself. You will be doing the work that will enable you to find that power. What is that work? It's admitting your powerlessness. It's opening your mind to the idea of a higher power. It's analyzing your resentments, your attitudes, your behavior, the things you have done, and your relationship to others. It's making amends for those things and seeing where you hurt others and listening to them. It's learning to listen. It's learning to put others first. And it's learning to at least try to put things right. It's learning to think in terms of a higher power, to have a God consciousness. If you go from steps 1 through 12, that enables you to find a higher power. It's not like we're simply saying, here's a God, believe in it, or get a God, make up a God, believe in this or that. If you do the work of the 12 steps, something happens. Something internally as well as externally. Your external world changes because you are listening to people. You are listening to what they say about you, what they say about their own lives. You are helping them. You are restoring and repairing damage you have done. You're actually doing something. It's like you're knitting and you're weaving something. And when you have done that work, you suddenly find that you haven't been doing it alone, that a power greater than yourself has been there with you, and suddenly there it is. And it's not something that you have to make up. It's not, it's not your father's Oldsmobile. It's not, a God that someone else hands you and demands you believe in. So I think we tend to blow by that, like I did the first time. When I read this, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. What I focused on the very first time I heard that was the phrase, which will solve your problem. I thought, wow, that's great. I believe. I jumped right into, I'll believe in any kind of power that will solve my problem. What prayers do you want me to say? What building do you want me to go to? I'll pray to that if it'll solve my problem. But I missed the first part of the sentence. It's the object of the book is to enable you. So that's why we have to kind of do the book, because, in so doing, that helps us to find the higher power. This chapter where he talks about faith and belief is not to suddenly make you necessarily say, oh God, I recognize you, I know you're real, I now believe in you. It may do that, and that would be great, but it's also to kind of say to you, this is possible. You can find a power greater than yourself that can solve your problems, and this book, step by step, can help you. So, okay. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. And that, of course, mirrored what I said. When I came in, I thought this was going to be some kind of neat, colorful system for learning how to drink. And I remember when people began to talk about faith, spirituality, and praying, I thought, oh God, this is just another tent show. This is just another revival. It's just another Jesus thing, And, I was really kind of downcast. I did not understand the difference between spirituality and people finding their own way spiritually and out religion. So I thought that was it's just a perfect sentence, but his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters. I have seen that in others, and I've seen it myself. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. We looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, an inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. We looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it all? And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet, in other moments, we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was soon fleeting and lost. Yes, we of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. So another absolutely crucial paragraph here. As soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe. In another AA-sanctioned book, The 12 and 12, it has another good line that says, we resign from the debate society. And that one really touched me, because I used to argue back and forth with you. And I believed in God, but I could argue both sides of it. And once I stopped doing that and laid aside prejudice, and I think here I would add just being willing to listen to other people's concepts of God. You know, I grew up with a very defined idea of God, and to come in and hear someone like Barefoot Bill, who has a very open concept, you know, who says, you know, I mean, I'm not saying what he said, but just in general, you know, a much more light, loving concept, a much more open concept. You know, my immediate reaction to somebody like that was, that guy is dead wrong, you know. And just to be able to tune that out and listen and look at him, you know, to look at someone, look at what that spirituality has done for that person, rather than the words they're saying, rather than the descriptions they're using. Look at what that spirituality has done for their lives, you know, how it's taken somebody who was really a mess and given them a life back. That's what really made me willing to believe. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, and all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. You know, and I can't express enough how great it is to hear that and how important it is to keep that in mind, and don't let your feelings about spirituality or faith stop you from continuing past this chapter and working the steps and staying in the program. So I'm at the top of 47. When, therefore, we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. Now here, just to take a little side trip, I sort of thought about this just this time, reading this book before coming to this meeting. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. Back on 45, it said, finding a higher power which will solve our problem. I asked myself, what did that mean to me? You know, when people pray to a higher power, or when they pray, what am I really looking for? You know, what is it I want? And, you know, later in this book, we come across, I think it's later. We come across the phrase, you know, we prayed only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry it out. And that was a new concept for me. The church I grew up in, people prayed for literally everything. You know, they thanked God for the salt that they put on their food. You know, they prayed for good grades. They prayed for everything. And they had, I'm not saying that's wrong, but that was their idea. And the idea that you pray specifically and in detail for what you want, and that your prayers kind of take the form of explaining the situation to God to make sure he understands, so that when he responds, he responds the way you want. That's the way I was taught to pray, you know, and so that's why I think I was so drawn on page 45 to this, which will solve your problem. You know, I was like, really? That's fantastic. And yet, when I got further in the book and I read some of the spiritual terms, meaning, you know, just be open to God, look for, have a God consciousness, you know, look for God's hand in things, listen to other people's concepts, it was hard for me because I had this very concrete idea. So, you know, this idea, honestly ask yourself what they mean to you, you know, and open up, you know, for me, it meant open up your mind, because what some of these spiritual terms meant to me were kind of like a hammer and a nail, you know, very specific. And I really had to open my mind up. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him. Afterwards, we found ourselves accepting many things, which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, how limited it was. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And I always come back to this. Sometimes my ideas about God, faith, spirituality, and religion get very complicated. And I just come back to this and say to myself, do I believe that there is a power greater than myself? And when I say yes to that, I can make everything very simple. That was great news for us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith, which seemed difficult to believe. When people presented us with spiritual approaches, how frequently did we all say, I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it would work if I could only believe as he believes, but I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. And I have my note written here that says, commence and stay at a simpler level. Because that's where I need to stay. It's just at the simple level of believing in a higher power. I would add to that the belief that it wants what's best for me and for the universe. And that it is, you know, loving and benign. And that I don't need to, you know, pray for hours and hours and make a lot of detail. You know, I have tried to come to a point of faith where prayer is mainly thanks to God, thanks for sobriety, thanks for so many things, and, you know, thoughts of others, prayers for others, prayers for sobriety for others and health, and listening, and just trying to align my life with God, and just trying to say, you know, please make me the person you want me to be. Please help me to do your will, without a lot of detail, because I tend to say, you know, please, this is my prayer, you know. I just kid myself sometimes that I'm doing it right. I'll say, you know, God, I'm praying only for knowledge of your will for me and the power to carry that out. Now tomorrow, when I go to carry, when I go, you know, and I'll just kind of get into this, and I have to say, you know, what are you doing? And it's indicative of how worried I am about something the longer I get into it. And I just need to dial back and try to listen. And, you know, but for me, this, like I said, you know, if I had waited until I had the perfect spiritual platform before doing the rest of the steps, I never would have got sober, because it took me such a long time to kind of unravel and unpack this whole thing. Hey. And, you know, it was just so hard. And even recently, you know, I've come to a few, you know, just realizations about it. You know, I realize that sometimes I feel like I'm not successful with my spiritual program. I feel like I don't want to pray, I don't want to listen, I don't want to do this or that. And I've had to learn that, you know, my feelings are not facts. That's something they used to say when I first came into AA. I may feel like I am not doing this program right. I may feel like I'm not, you know, like, this book doesn't have anything for me. I may feel like these are just words and it doesn't apply to me, but those are not facts. You know, my feelings are not facts. I may feel bad, but I may not be doing bad. You know, and, you know, that was something. Oh, I know. The other big revelation I had recently was faith is not a feeling. You know, having faith in a power greater than myself is not necessarily a warm and fuzzy feeling. You're not always going, let me speak for myself, I don't always feel taken care of. I don't always feel helped. I don't always feel safe, protected, and cared for. But that doesn't mean I'm not. And, you know, that doesn't mean that my higher power has abandoned me. That doesn't mean my higher power is not still in my life. You know, that doesn't mean that there is no power greater than myself just because I don't feel good that day. You know, I went through a lot of people, not a lot, there's not a lot of people here, but a couple people in this group know from a couple years back, I went through a difficult time with my mother. She got very sick. She moved close to me. She was in a nursing home. She subsequently died. You know, again, I went through kind of a struggle with my program and with my spiritual program, because I prayed really hard for God's help with a lot of specific things during that time. I couldn't help myself. You know, I would say, God, just help me to be at my best, to do what's best for my mom, to keep up with my job, to still be a good wife, you know, and still be there for my husband. And I was just coming apart, you know. I gained 30 pounds. I was losing my mind. I was climbing the walls. I would sit in this meeting with my head down like this. And, you know, I was going nuts. And it was just so difficult. And I really felt like it wasn't working for me. And I did everything except drink and drug. I did not sleep. You know, I was just going crazy. And I just had just so many wrong ideas about... I was so angry at God. I didn't lose my faith, but I just couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out why he wasn't helping me. What was I doing wrong? Why wasn't it working? I tried all these different things. I did another fourth step, fifth step. I went over my amends. I started reading the big book, you know, and I was just trying to make something work, to shake something loose, to get God to help me with my mother. And I just, you know... The only conclusion I came to was, you know, you can have a spiritual life, a spiritual relationship with God. You can have faith even when things feel bad. You know, God was there all the time. Things could have been worse, you know. The house could have burned down or something. I don't know. But I mean, it's hard to think how things could have been worse, but I'm sure they could have. And, you know, they could have been worse. But they weren't. And faith is not a feeling. You know, I never really lost my faith. I still believed. I still prayed. I still tried. I still did not drink and I still did not drug. God still kept me sober. I still kept coming to AA. You know, it did not feel good, but I still had a spiritual life. And, you know, it's kind of like you know, that old corny poem, you know, when things get tough, sometimes your higher power is carrying you and you don't even know it. And, you know, I was able to be there for her. I kept my job. I kept my husband. I still have this much of my health, you know, as I try to get back in shape. And, you know, I'm glad I had the foundation. I'm glad that this, you know, I had worked this program, that I had all of the program people here as examples for me. I'm glad that they listened. You know, I'm glad that I kept trying. Sometimes, you know, the only evidence you have for something is that you keep trying it. And, you know, and it keeps, I kept coming back to it. I kept coming back to prayer and coming back to, you know, the basic ideas on this page, that there is a power greater than myself, and I could call on that power, you know, to try and get through things. And, the thing I learned was faith is not always a great feeling, but that doesn't mean you don't have it. And it doesn't mean that your higher power isn't there. So, you know, when it says, it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level, commence and stay at a simple level. That's my prescription for myself. So, you know, as we go on in We Agnostics, we're not going to have time to read it all. The part of this chapter that I liked the least was at the bottom of page 48, where he begins to talk about the prosaic steel girder. You know, and he's basically just trying to give some balance to the idea of science versus spirituality. And that's, you know, it's interesting, but, you know, the bottom line for me of this chapter is, you know, the best part of it, let's skip ahead to my favorite part, which is on page 50. At the bottom of page 50, I think this is another key thing that helped me stay in AA at the beginning when I had a lot of, you know, when I was just very fogged in. It says, you know, right above it, it says, as a celebrated American statesman put it, let's look at the record. Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. When I came into what was my home group in AA, there were all kinds of people in it. And as I said, they told harrowing stories of all kinds. And yet they flatly declared that the program and having a power greater than themselves had changed them. And I was looking at them. And I stayed in that group a long time, and I saw a lot of people go from, you know, being out and out junkies and out, you know, skid row types to just the full flower of human life, you know. I went to weddings, I went to graduations, I went to christenings and housewarmings of people who had come in with nothing. And again, like feelings aren't facts, a lot of times I felt like my life hadn't changed that much. You know, yes, I'd stopped drinking, but I was not some huge success. And in front of me were a lot of people who were huge successes. You know, it was Manhattan. And, you know, I talked about this before. I would listen to people, you know, who I'd seen come in who were living in a homeless shelter. And, you know, a few years later, they were flying to Hollywood because their screenplay was in development, you know, and they're meeting with this and meeting with that. And I would be like, you know, and I mean, I met people like that, people who ended up on Broadway, people who ended up in publishing, people who did this, people who did that. And sometimes it didn't feel that great, but I saw it with my own eyes, and I just couldn't deny it. And when they would talk about their prayer life and their spirituality, what can you say, you know? And I just thought, just to hear these stories, I want to come here every week just to be with these people, just to see that there is still something, that the age of miracles is not past, you know, and that you can, you know, you can hear it. And then at the top of page 51, they show how the change came over them when many hundreds of people are able to say, that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact in their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. People would get in that meeting, and this meeting right here too, and talk about how they had, I'll never forget Jill talking about, you know, in her own life, how she would have to go to some important meeting and be really nervous, and she would just pretend that her higher power was sitting on the seat beside her. I'll never forget that image. And, you know, and take that with her as she went into, you know, some very serious situation. And I heard many people talk like that. People on Wall Street, you know, going into a meeting where they thought they were going to be fired. I used to go to a morning meeting before work, you know, and people were really afraid sometimes about the day ahead, and they would talk about it. And just seeing that, and then seeing them the next day and the next day, you know, yep, I made it. I don't know how I said what I said, but I got the words out, you know. And I would try that, you know, and I have tried it. I've prayed before. I had to meet with my mom's doctors and all these decisions I had to make. I pray before I go to work. And I try not to get in the weeds. Sometimes I get in the weeds, but I try to just say, you know, give me the right words to say. Help me to be the person you want me to be, you know, and help me to make the best decisions. And, you know, sometimes I'm really not sure and it doesn't feel good, but I know I did the best I could because I did take that time and I did pray. And, you know, it sounds commonplace. Some of you have been around now. But just remember when the first time you heard people say that, you know, when you came in and you were still hungover and you were like, you prayed? What? You know, like you wanted to drink, you know, like I couldn't imagine it. You know, I would go out after work, like I said, with these people, and I'd say, you're telling me I should pray before I go out with them, or I should pray and ask if I should go out, or I should I just could not put two and two together, you know. I could not figure out how it was ever going to work for me. I didn't know how I was ever going to stop. One of the, you know, like, I couldn't get the part where you stop drinking, you know, like, I thought, what am I going to do all day? I had a job when I first came in where I went to work, like, later in the day. I worked at a newspaper. The earliest I ever came in was at 11. That's when the job started. It was like 11 to 7. The presses rolled at like 7 o'clock, and then it was the end of the day. So we came in. I was on the editing side. The reporters came in at 9. The editing side came in later. Some of the editors didn't even come in until 3. So it was like 11 to 7 or 3 to 10. And, you know, what I did during those empty hours was drink or get recover from drinking. And I remember coming into AA. You know, people were like, well, you're going to stop drinking, and when you feel the urge to drink, you can, you know, you're going to go to a meeting, and you're going to pray, and you're going to read the book, and call us, you know, you're going to do these things, go to a meeting, and pray before you go to work. And I just didn't see how that was going to stop me at all. I just did not see it at all. And then I tried it, and gradually I did stop. You know, I don't know how. You know, one day I just found myself at work, and I hadn't had a drink. And I found myself leaving work, and everybody was like, come on, we're going out. And I was like, you know what, I'm beat, I'm going home. And I was like, where did that come from? Where did those words come from? You know, and they were going up the street, and I was going the other way. How? You know, it seemed as before that, like, people have said, one day I was drinking, and the next day I wasn't. You know, and you know, nothing else is like that. It's not like one day you enter college and the next day you leave, you know. It's not like that, but, you know, it seemed to happen that way. And a big part of it was this, you know, that the consciousness of the presence of God, doing the work of this book, coming to meetings, hanging around, listening and talking, and trying, you know, letting prejudice go from your mind, trying something as intangible as prayer can really make the difference. So let's see, what else can I read before in the next couple of minutes? Let me see. Okay, so we'll read the bedevilments and then we'll open it up. So 52, for those of you who are new, I'm going to read one of the most famous paragraphs. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems this same readiness to change our point of view, that is, to open our minds to spiritual thinking. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. He's talking about how people believe in science just based upon, you know, an idea like, oh, one day man will reach the moon. You know, we opened our minds to the concept of space flight. Why don't we open our minds as readily to spirituality? That's what he's asking. But you'll hear people in the rooms talk about the bedevilments. You know, if this is what's going on in your life, you've got bedevilments. You know, if you can't control your emotions, prey to misery and depression, couldn't make a living, feeling of uselessness, full of fear, unhappy. You know, you got the bedevilments. Congratulations. You know, and, you know, open your mind to applying some of the spiritual principles to these problems, which was, like I just said, it's so alien when you first start, and yet around you are people doing it all the time. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. So that is a very incomplete look at we agnostics. So I hope for anyone who is new and who has been sort of up in the air about some of the more explicitly spiritual steps of the program, I hope you'll open your mind to that, and I hope you'll keep coming back, and I hope you won't be shy about speaking about spiritual matters with other people. Thank you very much. Thank you.